Well, I'd like to welcome you to this relationship coaching call. And the topic of today's session is boundaries. Now, boundaries are a really difficult issue for most people in virtually every relationship, not just in love relationships, but in parent-child relationships, in relationships with other family members, in work relationships, friend relationships. When do you feel that a friend is perhaps overstepping a boundary? When is a friend, for example, who wants to talk to you, just connecting and communicating, and when is that communication intrusive? When is it a communication you'd rather not have? When is a spouse or loved one just making an appropriate request of you or having an appropriate conversation with you? Or when is that conversation overstepping the boundaries? What are healthy boundaries with your spouse or with your partner? And what are boundaries that are excluding them or putting up barriers to good relationships with them? When you have work relationships, what is an appropriate work relationship and what is a relationship that intrudes on your personal boundaries? So boundaries are something we need all our lives in virtually every relationship. And what constitutes a healthy boundary and what constitutes an unhealthy intrusion over the boundary, a step over that line, is really a crucial question for you to contemplate in all your relationships. Boundaries growing up are not something we have instinctively. They're something we learn. Like, for example, touch. Touch is one of the very first places we learn boundaries. When we're infants, when we're very young, when we're newborns, when we're toddlers, we need lots and lots of touch, and we expect to be touched and held all the time. What happens, though, is as a toddler matures, gradually a toddler who's crawling begins to, for example, crawl a little further away from its mother or father. Now, the zone from which it travels from the mother and father is very limited at first, so the toddler stays very close and then looks back to the mother or father or the caregiver for support. If it's getting a nurturing, reassuring glance, it'll venture a little bit further and then further still. So it becomes more confident as it gets older and as it develops good experiences of the world. So the physical limits of the boundaries that it goes to, the envelope of comfort gets larger and larger and larger over time. Eventually, of course, the toddler learns to walk and run, and then you might have a situation where the toddler is running and it's the parent who's saying, no, you can't go into traffic. No, you can't cross over into the neighbor's yard. No, you can't run in the street. No, you can't go outside the fence. So the parent will then set physical boundaries for the child. The parent also obviously sets boundaries for the child's behavior. The parent might say, you can't say those words. You can't use that language. You can't do a certain type of behavior, for example, shoving your sibling or hitting a playmate in the playground. So the parent will set boundaries for the child growing up. And although it's hard for parents to set those boundaries, it might seem like a restriction on the toddler, actually research has shown that setting healthy boundaries, setting clear boundaries, healthy boundaries, and having natural and logical consequences for overstepping those boundaries produces a feeling of safety for children. So children who get those healthy boundaries growing up and clear, logical, natural consequences for overstepping those boundaries actually develop a much more secure attachment style and a secure confidence within their boundaries than children who don't get those boundaries. So although it's hard for parents to set limits for children and enforce those limits, paradoxically, that produces stronger and healthier adults. But few of us got really clear boundaries set for us when we were children. We may have had very arbitrary boundaries. One day a behavior is acceptable, the next day it's not. So the lines are blurry in our minds. So we grow up not being sure with other people what constitutes a good boundary, a healthy boundary, and what constitutes an unhealthy boundary or problematic behavior. Touch is likewise ambiguous. We need that touch. We crave that touch. We long for that touch when we're children. In fact, there are certain neural complexes, especially in the center line of our bodies, from our upper chest to our lower abdomen, that depend for their full development on touch, on being held. But then as we're growing older, we may find there are limits to touch. We might be comfortable with a friend touching us in certain places, but not in others. We might have a friend who needs and wants a lot of touch, more touch than we're comfortable with. How do we say, that's enough, I'm not comfortable with that, without alienating that person? That's a crucial question we may face as we're growing up. Also, we have to deal with the phenomenon of unwanted touch when we're adolescents. Perhaps there's somebody who's fond of us, who's attracted to us, and wants to be touched by us and to touch us, and we feel uncomfortable with that touch. Learning to say no and set healthy boundaries is essential to good emotional development. So boundaries are a question mark for us throughout our lives. I know in my own marriage, I've had to go beyond my boundaries to accommodate my wife's need for connection. And so, for example, when I get home after a long day's work, I want to just have a glass of wine, zone out, read a book, but she wants to connect. Now, I've come to recognize that if I take a deep breath and connect with her, look into her eyes, ask her about her day, touch her, hug her, it's not something I would naturally do, but if I extend my boundaries and take those steps and cultivate that connection, then there's a sense of emotional warmth and intimacy, the sense of emotional closeness, and suddenly we're in a much better space than I would be if I were to isolate. And certainly my marriage is in a much better space than I would be if I were to follow my natural inclination to be a hermit. So sometimes the boundaries we have, we choose to extend in ways like that to create a healthy relationship or to improve our relationships. Most of our work with boundaries, though, is in the nature of knowing when to say no. When you're asked to do that extra thing by that friend and you just can't give anymore, it might worry you that you'll hurt their feelings by saying, I can't do that. And so you do it anyway, and then overextend yourself and feel guilty or resentful or otherwise compromised emotionally. And you might tend to then blame the friend for asking you, but the root of the problem is that you are the one who violated your own boundaries by saying yes. So all of these are aspects of boundaries, aspects of learning to find our boundaries, discover our boundaries, identify our boundaries, and then sometimes go beyond our boundaries and often communicate our boundaries clearly to other people. A lot of boundary issues later in a relationship can be resolved by clear communication about boundaries early on. For example, if you do have that friend who's touching you in a place you don't want to be touched, you can say, that doesn't feel good, that doesn't feel comfortable early on. Or if they're making a demand of you or a request of you that feels uncomfortable, you can say, you know, this feels okay, but beyond that point, doesn't feel good to me. So being really clear with people early on about your boundaries is extremely helpful. But to do that, to be clear with a friend about your boundaries, you have to know what they are. And that takes self-inquiry, that takes inner reflection, that takes getting clear. And once you are clear, you move on to that next step of verbalizing those boundaries and sharing with the person that this is where I stop. This is what feels comfortable to me. When children are very young, they have no sense of separation from especially their mother. They have no ability to distinguish, in fact, that they're different from their mother's body. A newborn doesn't know yet that it's different from its mother because, of course, for 9 months, it's been growing in its mother's body and there's no physical separation between the mother and the child. But the child quickly figures out that there is a boundary, that there are two separate beings here, that there's a place where I end and you begin. But emotionally, many of us grow up emotionally stunted, not having that clear sense of this is where I end, this is where you begin. So it's really important to develop that concept. Fritz Perls was a genius therapist and the developer of Gestalt therapy. And from Gestalt therapy in the 1950s and 60s and onwards, many modern forms of therapy spring. And you'll find that throughout this course, I refer to Gestalt therapy, I refer to Fritz Perls, and I use concepts from Gestalt because when combined with tapping, with mindfulness, with neurofeedback, with all the other methods used in this course, I found Gestalt is extremely useful. And one of the crucial issues that Fritz Perls felt people had to learn to do as adults was develop healthy boundaries. That often our adult relationships, he felt, were simply reenacting unhealthy patterns from our childhood. We're trying to resolve unhealthy habits we'd acquired, trying to complete incompletions from our childhood. So if we hadn't learned those boundary lessons early on, as a toddler, as an infant, at school, in high school, in our early relationship life, then we would reenact those unhealed parts of ourselves, those incomplete parts of ourselves, in our adult relationships until we learned to develop, state, and use healthy boundaries. So we saw the process as one of endlessly reenacting our childhood wounds until we train ourselves to grow up. We train ourselves to notice and understand where I end and where you begin, that we are separate in these places. Yes, we're together in these places, but here's the boundary, and here we're separate. I also recommend, as you know, elsewhere in the course, I recommend that couples spend time apart. Even if you're living together, even if you're married, it's very healthy to take that weekend off, maybe once a month, and go away by yourself. I go to a men's group, and my men's group is really emotionally nurturing for me, and it's a source of emotional nurturing that's completely separate from my marriage. It's not as though I have all my eggs in one basket when it comes to emotional nurturing. Sometimes I'll need to talk to a friend. There are some topics I don't really want to talk to my wife about. I want to talk to a friend about those and have a different kind of conversation than the emotionally close one I want to have with my wife. So learning those boundaries and having relationships, different relationships, in which you exercise different kinds of boundary areas is really useful. And having time apart from the relationship, not putting all your emotional eggs in one basket, having people you can talk to, having a therapist, a counselor, a priest, a spiritual teacher, a community aside, apart from your relationship, is really healthy. You then come to your relationship refreshed and renewed after you've worked on yourself, after you've strengthened yourself, after you've maybe had a catharsis, after you've maybe had healing in that other community, you come back to your relationship stronger and with a more defined sense of self, and with a sense of self that's not dependent on one person. If you put all your eggs in one basket and try and turn your spouse into your community, into your spiritual counselor, into your therapist, into the person responsible for taking care of your unhealed wounds, I can almost guarantee you will have a codependent and unhealthy relationship. You'll be trying to get things from your spouse that you really are only able to get by resolving your own childhood wounds. Now, the beautiful thing about this is when you take responsibility for yourself as a sovereign, independent adult and do the inner work and heal those childhood wounds, what happens then is you go back into the marriage, back into the relationship as a strong, independent adult person with healthy boundaries, with a healthy sense of self, with a high sense of self-esteem. And that empowered, sovereign, responsible adult is capable of creating a wonderful relationship. It's not as though you have a needy, insecure, incomplete person asking for another person to complete them, or even worse, demanding that another person complete them and throwing tantrums when the other person is incapable of meeting those impossible demands. People in that state go from partner to partner to partner, trying to get them to fill those unhealed childhood voids. And the truth is, your partner can never fill those. Only you can. You can dive in, do this work, repair those deficits. So you then go into every relationship as this empowered, responsible, fun-loving, playful adult. And that is a far better place in which to approach a relationship than that needy, unhealed child. So boundaries in this sense are tremendously valuable when you learn to fill yourself up, when within your own boundaries of selfhood, you are empowered, you are fulfilled, you have taken responsibility for making yourself a joyful person. You then bring all that yummy richness into the relationship. You are then an incredibly attractive human being, and your spouse is attracted to you. Other people are drawn to you because you walk in the world as an empowered human being within your boundaries. So you do far more good for yourself by working on your own issues than you do by trying to find a partner who will work on them with you. And as you know in this course, I advocate not just having a couples counselor or taking a class like this. I also advocate you having your own individual counselor quite apart from your spouse, because you then can go and work on those issues alone. Go and work on those issues with your therapist, with your counselor, with your coach, with your priest. Work on those issues yourself independently, and then bring that fully embodied self into your love relationships. So the theme, again, for this live coaching call is boundaries. And if you've been following our discussions in the forums on Tapping Deep Intimacy, you'll see that I'd asked Jude if Jude would work with me in the course of this call. And Jude, I see you are on the line there from Ireland. And I've unmuted you, and I'd really appreciate you introducing yourself to everyone and just sharing a little bit about your experience so far as you've implemented tapping and these other techniques in your own life.
Yeah, thanks, Dawson. Hi, everyone. Yeah, it's been an amazing year, actually, since I started taking part in this. I am a therapist, so I have done quite a lot of work, and I understand quite a lot of the depth of the issues that you're talking about. But I suppose, like everyone else, that doesn't necessarily mean that I've sorted them all out. And boundaries is something that has been problematic for me. On the face of it, I grew up with very good boundaries. In those physical boundaries that you were talking about, you know, safety issues, we, you know, went to bed on time, we had our own space, we, you know, there were consequences for breaking the rules and regulations. It was very clear about what was right and what was wrong. So in that sense, there were very good boundaries in our family. But in some ways, they were very rigid. So in two specific areas, I suppose, things would have been more difficult. One was that I never learned that it was okay to say no to an adult or a person in authority, because it was never okay to say no to my parents. And so that was one very clear, messy boundary issue for me. And a second one would have been that, you made reference to it there, the danger in being different. And in our family, everybody looks alike, they sound alike, they behave alike, and we're regularly mistaken for each other. So the lines between us are kind of blurred in that sense. And so, when I come up against very strong differences with other people, that can be difficult for me to negotiate. Is it okay for me to hold out for what I think is appropriate for me if that is very different from the other person and they're absolutely sure of their ground, And I tend to go all woolly and vague in the face of that and lose my own ground in that, So those would be two very clear areas. And you put it really well that, where do I end and other people begin? And I find that in small issues, maybe I could give you an example. I was tapping regularly with someone the back end of last year and the early part of this year. And because they're in the US and I'm in Ireland, we were doing it over the internet. And sometimes, as the connection isn't good and the call can get dropped. And one time when that happened, when we got reconnected, my tapping partner made a big joke of it, saying, "See what a powerful person you are. You brought down the whole internet." And I didn't really think that was terribly funny, because I'd been tapping about something that was very personal to me, and I was quite upset by her remark. But I kind of told myself I was being oversensitive, and I kind of brushed it aside. And then in a subsequent call, the same thing happened, and she made the same joke. And I asked her not to say that, and I said, I don't think that's terribly funny. And she said, "Oh, I was only joking. Can you not take a joke?" and so on. And so I'm left with this sort of messy area in the middle where it doesn't feel like a joke to me. And I was actually really quite upset by her remark. And you can probably hear the wobble in my voice when I say that. But as far as she was concerned, she was just making a joke, and that was where she was. So, yeah, that's a typical example of the sort of thing that sends me off.
Now, in your forum post, Jude, you mentioned an event when you were 10. Had you linked that to your tapping partner's comment, or was it a separate issue for you?
Well, I think where that particular incident has played a huge role, Dawson, is that was an incident that happened between me and my mother, and I never really reconnected in the relationship with my mother until quite recently. I was there in body and, going through the motions of it, but I would essentially have closed down emotionally around my mother at that time. So it never really got healed in relationship, if you know what I mean. That issue never really got healed in relationship. And I think so it probably was something that was that has been a key incident. I don't know if I'm answering your question.
One good way to see if they're related is to check into your body as you talk about the event. Don't tell us what the event was. Let's just keep that confidential. But just give it that event when you were 10 years old with your mother, give that event a name.
That day in the kitchen.
I'm sorry, Jude, what in the kitchen?
That day in the kitchen.
That day in the kitchen, okay, good, okay. And so when you give your movie a title like That Day in the Kitchen, where do you feel it in your body when you say those words?
Okay, I'm aware of a nausea in my stomach. And I feel very warm. My body feels very hot.
Okay, those are very reliable body signals. And when you think back to your tapping partner saying, you're so powerful that you broke the internet, where is that in your body? Same place or different place?
Same place, yeah.
Same place, yeah. And that's usually an indication that they're connected. One of the really interesting schools of therapy that I studied way back along the road was called co-counseling, or also known as reevaluation counseling. And the man who developed it was called Harvey Jackins. And you actually, in reevaluation counseling, you have a partner and you aren't tapping, but there's a lot of emphasis in that school on physical sensations and discharging physically. And just personal side note, when I was getting divorced from my first wife many years ago, we were both doing reevaluation counseling, and we were doing it with each other during the divorce, and we were also doing it with other people outside of the divorce, and it was so useful to have that therapeutic support during the course of what was a very, bottomly, very amicable divorce, even though we had two kids. And so what Harvey Jackins believed, he wasn't a therapist, I think he was actually a truck driver, but after doing just thousands of sessions with people and developing the school of counseling, Harvey Jackins believed that virtually all emotional trauma is related, and he would draw trauma in the brain as this octopus with many tentacles, just dozens of tentacles. And what he said is if you touch one tentacle, then you touch the whole octopus. And it doesn't really matter which event you go in through. So whether you go in through the event of your tapping partner saying you broke the internet, or you go in through the tentacle of your mother when you were 10 years old and that day in the kitchen, you're hitting that same big mass of distress. And I didn't have EFT back then. I wish I had EFT back then, because what I found with EFT is that when you start tapping, that you can very quickly start to dissolve the entire octopus. It doesn't take long often when you've got a tentacle to use that tentacle to gain access to the whole thing. And so there are big tentacles that are really hurtful, like the event with your mother in the kitchen. There are other tentacles that remind you of that set that whole structure in your brain buzzing and vibrating and feeling uncomfortable again. There's the tentacle of the body sensations, feeling that nausea in your stomach. And you can actually approach the octopus through any of these things. And the goal isn't to solve the overt problem. The goal isn't to fix your tapping partner. The goal isn't to fix your mother. The goal is to dissolve that thing that's preventing you feel all the love and the joy and the inner peace that is your birthright. And so any of these things is an access point into that, and they're all related. So as we do EFT on it, I think you'll find that the degree of distress around all of these things goes down. And EFT, we call this the generalization effect. And I've got a whole section in the new edition of the EFT manual on the generalization effect, because once you start to tap on one of those things and the number goes down for that tentacle, then the number starts to go down for the whole body of the octopus and for all the tentacles. And it's really interesting how when you do this, that you can have an effect on all of these sources of distress, not just the one that's uppermost in your mind right now. So it's not surprising to me that you have the same physical sensations around the current event and also the 10-year-old event and probably other events in your life as well.
Yeah, yeah. And as you were talking about the tentacles, and I could almost see the picture in my mind, you know, what came to me was that the commonality between them is it's not safe to be open.
Oh, that's a big one. So being open and then you're self-disclosing and then
yeah.
you get punished or you get, yeah.
Or it lands badly or somebody misunderstands or something like that. But the common theme is it's not safe to be open. Yeah.
So when you say that it's not, so I'm just going to say to you right now, Jude, it's not safe to be open.
Yeah.
Just feel it land, feel it in your body. Feel that nausea in your stomach. Tune into that. And just allow yourself to really feel that feeling rather than suppressing it or pushing it away or wanting it to be different. Let yourself just feel that hurt little girl learning these painful life lessons. And as you feel that fully, what's your degree of triggering? So how big is your number from 0 to 10 of that nausea in your stomach?
The nausea has actually receded a bit, and it's probably about a 4
okay.
or a 5.
Okay.
It's probably about 4 or a 5. I feel very sad, and I have a sort of a tightness or a lump in my throat. Which is about a 6 or 7.
Okay.
I'm still feeling very warm, by the way. And that's
okay.
Probably about a 6 as well.
Okay, good. Well, I love it that you're so tuned into your body. And as you know, being a therapist, there are some clients who are really tuned into their bodies. There are other clients who basically regard their body as a support structure to hold up their head.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's so useful to be able to drop into your body and give that kind of great, vivid description of what's happening down there, because that's a good way of testing our results and seeing if we're being effective. Well, that's happening. So what I'd like to do is as you've been talking, I've been thinking, let's do a quick round of tapping on the event, but then let's do a long round using the 9 gamut, because we want to get at that core belief. We want to really approach as many of the messages, as many of the events that gave you that core belief that it's not safe to be open as possible. And the 9 gamut is a good way to clear lots of events all at the same time. And once we've got a hold of one tentacle, we grab onto that tentacle, we hold that tentacle, we try and get as vivid an access to that part of the octopus as possible, and keep holding onto it using the 9 gamut until hopefully it really starts to shift.
Sounds
good. So, everyone listening on the call, please tap along with us. Grab your EFT diagram from the EFT mini manual. It's the back of the mini manual if you don't have it handy. And if you don't recall the points, just have that diagram handy and then tap along with us. And again, even though your event is going to be uniquely yours and different from Jude's, you'll find that as you tap along and borrow benefits from this, that your energy system knows how to correct. Your psychological network and your neurological network know what your hot buttons are, what your big issues are. You know exactly how to heal. And so when you start tapping, even though your issue isn't Jude's issue, we all have boundary problems, and we've all learned at some point it's not safe to be open. And you'll find that as you tap along, bearing your issue in mind, as I work with Jude, the chances are very good that your number will go down too. But to make sure that we are getting results, I'd like everyone listening to the call to write down the title of one movie in your life like Jude's movie was that day in the kitchen. So write down your movie title. Write down the place in your body you feel the sensation most strongly. And write down how strong the sensation is on a scale of 0 to 10, with 0 being totally peaceful and calm, and 10 being as upset as you possibly can be. So that handy scale from 0 to 10, with 0 being minimal emotional distress and 10 being maximum emotional distress, is a good guide to whether or not EMP is being effective. So you've now written down the name of your movie, secondly, the location of your body, and thirdly, your number on the scale from 0 to 10, with 0 being no emotional distress and 10 being the maximum possible emotional distress. Thank you, so Jude. Let's get to work.
Okay.
So we'll start with the karate chop point. Start tapping there. This is an important point to tap because it's the psychological reversal correction point. And almost always with an octopus, there is psychological reversal that holds the octopus in place. So I do lots of tapping on the karate chop point. So say out loud after me, even though I remember,
even though I remember
that day in the kitchen,
that day in the kitchen. Dolphin, I think,
yes.
I should tell you that the film breaks off and I actually don't remember all of it. My memory breaks off halfway through it, so I partly remember it, but I don't know what happened in the end.
Okay. Well, maybe you can just fill in the gaps using your imagination.
Yes, I can do that.
And make them awful.
Okay, I'll do that. Yeah.
Make them as vivid and tragic and miserable as you possibly can, just for the sake of capturing that tentacle.
Thank you, that's helpful. Yeah.
So even despite that awful day in the kitchen.
Despite that awful day in the kitchen.
I am me.
I am me.
And I survived.
And I survived.
I survived a lot of awful things in my life.
I've survived a lot of awful things in my life.
And I am strong.
And I am strong.
And I accept who I am.
And I accept who I am.
The survivor.
The survivor.
Of all those awful things.
Of all those awful things.
Including that day in the kitchen.
Including that day in the kitchen.
Eyebrow point, that day in the kitchen.
That day in the kitchen.
Side of your eye, that day in the kitchen.
That day in the kitchen.
Under your eye, that day in the kitchen.
That day in the kitchen.
Under your nose, that awful day.
That awful day.
Chin, it ended badly.
It ended badly.
Collarbone point. And I now know.
And I now know.
Under your arm, that it's not safe to be open.
That it's not safe to be open.
Back to your karate chop point. It's not safe to be open.
It's not safe to be open.
Gamut point on the back of your hand. It's not safe to be open.
It's not safe to be open.
Eyes closed and then eyes open. Keeping your head still. Eyes down, hard to the left. Eyes down, hard to the right. It's not safe to be open.
It's not safe to be open.
Let's do that a couple more times. Eyes down, hard to the left. It's not safe to be open.
It's not safe to be open.
Hard to the right. It's not safe to be open.
It's not safe to be open.
Hard to the left. It's not safe to be open.
It's not safe to be open.
Eyes in a big, slow circle, keeping your head steady, and while tapping the gamut point. It's never safe to be open.
It's never safe to be open.
Keep your eyes moving slowly in the same direction, very slowly, all the way around every point of the compass. It's never safe to be open.
It's never safe to be open.
It never has been safe to be open.
It never has been safe to be open.
My whole life, it has never been safe to be open.
My whole life, it has never been safe to be open.
It's never safe to be open with anybody.
It's never safe to be open with anybody.
If you're open, you get hurt.
If you're open, you get hurt.
If you're open, you always get hurt.
If you're open, you always get hurt.
Okay, now reverse your eyes, other direction. If I'm open in the future.
If I'm open in the future.
I will always get hurt.
I will always get hurt.
In the past.
In the past.
If I'm open, I get hurt.
If I'm open, I get hurt.
In the future.
In the future.
Whenever I'm open, I will definitely get hurt.
Whenever I'm open, I will definitely get hurt.
There is no possible outcome from being open.
There is no possible outcome from being open.
Other than getting hurt.
Other than getting hurt.
You keep tapping, keep your head still, reverse your eyes again. Eyes in a big, slow circle, making sure you aren't skipping any part of the compass. Being open equals getting hurt.
Being open equals getting hurt.
It always has been that way.
It always has been that way.
It always will be that way.
It always will be that way.
There is no outcome from being open.
There is no outcome from being open.
Other than getting hurt.
Other than getting hurt.
Okay, now tap the reversal point again. The quadi chop point on the side of your hand. Also, Jude, go ahead and rub the sore spots, which are on your chest just below your collarbone. Rub those points on both sides and see if you can find a sore spot there. And while you're rubbing there, say again out loud, being open equals getting hurt.
Being open equals getting hurt.
Do you know where the liver point is, just above your lower rib?
I do.
Okay, rub the liver points, and rub them hard. And usually they're a little bit tender when you rub them. Find a tender spot there on the liver point. And for everyone listening who doesn't know where the liver point is, I'll post that in the forum today as well, so you'll have the information about the liver point. The liver point is one you use for usually family emotional wounding. It's a good point to rub, so it's not often used in EFT anymore, but when I first began to rub that point, it was so sore on my body, but now it's not sore at all. So does it feel tender, Jude, when you rub the liver point?
It does, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So just say again, being open equals getting hurt.
Being open equals getting hurt.
Okay, eyebrow point. I revealed myself.
I revealed myself.
And I got hurt.
And I got hurt.
Side of your eye. Whenever I reveal myself.
Whenever I revealed myself.
And your eye. I got hurt.
I got hurt.
Under your nose. Revealing yourself.
Revealing yourself
Chin means you get hurt.
means you get hurt.
Collarbone point. When they see me,
When they see me.
under your arm, they will hurt me.
They will hurt me.
Okay, let's do some of what we call argument tapping, and that's just reversing what you say. So tap your reversal point again, the karate chop point again, and say, when I reveal myself,
When I reveal myself,
they should love me.
they should love me.
I'm 10 years old.
I'm 10 years old.
I'm revealing my heart.
I'm revealing my heart.
The precious heart of a child.
The precious heart of a child.
It should be loved.
It should be loved.
And I love that little girl right now.
And I love that little girl right now.
So, Jude, imagine little Jude walking in now, walking into the room where you are. And she comes up to you, and she looks at you. She sees you've grown up, and you're strong, beautiful, capable, elegant, mature, articulate, loving human being. She sees just how fantastically well your life turned out. And let her just look at you for a few minutes. That little version of Jude, just she's in the room right now looking up at you, and she just sees how good everything turned out, that you survived, that you're fine, that you're such a good person. That you're giving her love, that you have all the love for her that other people, your mother, others, didn't give her. All the love is there for her now. Keep tapping your reversal point. But I'd like to invite you to invite her to sit on your lap, and I'd like you just to rock her and hold her and tap on her. So tap on her karate chop point, tap on her eyebrow points, tap on her side of the eye point. Just tap on each point of little Jude. Tell her she's safe. She can come to you anytime she wants to. She can show herself to you. She can be open with you. And you will give her nothing but love. I'd like you to tap on two points on little Jude right now. Tap on the top of the head point and tap on her liver point at the same time. Just tell her it's safe to be open with me.
Yawning loads.
So tell me now, what's happening for you? What's happening for little Jude?
Well, I think she knows that it's safe to be open with me. And I'm happy for her to be open with me. I'm happy that I can handle whatever she wants to say kindly and with compassion and warmth.
How does she feel in her body?
How does she feel in her body? I had a rush of energy through my body when you asked that. How does she feel in her body? Yeah, good.
So she really feels as though she can be open with you in her body as well as in her mind with her emotions.
Yes, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. Because believing something in our heads is one thing.
Yeah.
But really having this visceral sense that it's safe is a very different level of security.
Yeah. I kind of have two things going on in my own body at the same time. One is that sort of energy rush, which I do associate with feeling safe and secure. And the other is a sort of a slight tightness in my chest. I'm not sure what that is, but yes. Slight tightness between my chest and my throat. It's like a sort of a tube there. Eased a little as I said it.
Let's do some tapping for you on those points. So I was having you tap the liver point and the top of the head point, and the idea here is to start to really connect up. So go ahead and put one finger in your belly button, in your navel.
Okay.
So one middle finger will be there. One middle finger will be right between your eyes, between your eyebrows.
Okay.
And just lift up slightly with both fingertips right now. And now also relax your tongue. So it's resting loosely on the floor of your mouth. And then take the hand that's touching your forehead between your eyebrows. Just tap on your heart area while keeping the other hand in your belly button. Now keep tapping your heart area. Take your other hand and tap between your eyebrows. Then tap the top of your head. And that should really loosen up that flow between your chest and your throat.
Yes, it does feel easier. And I'm yawning.
Good. Yeah. That's a good sign. And so check in now with your stomach and that feeling in your stomach. How does your stomach feel right now?
Yeah, there's a slight amount of sensation left in it. I'd say it's probably about a 2. My chest and throat have eased. Yeah, it's about a 2.
And how hot are you?
Still quite warm.
Okay.
Not as hot as I was earlier on, but I am still quite warm, yeah.
Okay. So you were 6 earlier on. What are you
I was,
now?
Yeah, I'm probably a 2 or 3 now.
Okay. So think back now to your movie called That Day in the Kitchen. And see how triggered you are by it now after the tapping.
I don't actually feel triggered by it at all. It's like I can see it, and where it did stop, it sort of now continues, but I can't actually see what happens, but it does continue. But there's no charge around it. There's no charge at all around it. And that the stop thing where it broke off has always been like a sort of a wall, like a dead end, and so that's quite different. I don't know if I'm explaining that very well, but there isn't
that
the shocking abruptness of the wall that was there.
The version of little Jude that came to you, was it the 10-year-old version or a younger version? How old was she?
10-year-old.
Okay. Well, I'd like to ask you to spend time with her, a little bit of time with her, consciously every day. Just welcome her into your heart, welcome her into your life. Ask her to talk to you. Ask her to share any unhealed parts of her experience. Tap on her. And just remind her that she's loved. And remind her each day that it is safe to be open, so that she's getting that message over and over and over again.
Mm. That's lovely idea. Thank you.
You didn't think you'd pick up a 10-year-old in the course of the phone call.
It feels really significant, you know, and it feels really significant. Words kind of aren't doing it, but I don't know, I can't really communicate to you the feeling, but it does feel really significant.
Yeah, oh, it is, yeah.
Yeah.
And then practicing that feeling of validation, of taking that child in your arms, taking that child into your heart, and loving that child, and giving that child the love it never got. And most of our parents do the best they can. They may have been busy, upset, distracted. They had all kinds of other things going on. They didn't have as much love for us as we needed. But we can start to fill those voids now. And it's amazing when you start to welcome that younger version of yourself into your current experience, that as you pour your own adult love into that childhood part of yourself, part of your psyche, that it really does seem to flesh out those areas that it never received from your parents. Mm. And it often does make the child feel much better and healed and resolved. So doing it regularly and just like welcoming the child into your meditations, welcoming the child into parts of your day when you're able to give it attention, and then giving it those things that never got from your parents early on is a surprisingly powerful way of filling in those deficits.
Mm. Yeah, and I kind of had an image as you were saying that of it kind of being in a sort of a circular, it kind of just keeps multiplying in that. You know, if I give it to the child, and then it kind of comes back forward again in a kind of a loopy thing.
Yes. Absolutely, because you're helping that younger version of yourself, and that's been changing the older version of yourself.
Yeah, lovely. Yeah. That's so cool.
Sue, thank you so much for sharing on all those levels, sharing your experience, sharing your physical shifts, sharing your insights, and I'd also appreciate you just posting those on the forum too, so we can all be reminded of them.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Dawson. I really have gained so much from this program on so many levels that I never actually realized I could ever achieve, and you've been such a huge influence in my life in that respect, and I hope you can hear that.
Jude, I love doing this work. I love the shifts it produces in people, and it's actually hugely powerful for me too, because there's part of me that has that component that feels is not safe to be open. So I get a chance to work on that part of myself as well.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the great thing about EFT, isn't it?
It is. The sparring benefits thing really works.
Yeah.
Well, thanks again. And
I would
encourage each person listening to if you need to pick a different event, maybe in a day or two, maybe later this month, and work on your own issue. You can play this again and do the exercise again with different ages, versions of yourself. You can play the exercise again and tap with different experiences you had that hurt you. You can tap four different times in your life. You can tap four different people in your life, a mother, a father, a brother, a sister, an uncle, an aunt. You can do this, run this several times, tap on each one and feel the shifts happening. Do record those in your journal. Make sure you write those down. It's so important to write them down before and after, because when you have those before and after numbers, when you know you were seven before and you were two now, or you felt physically so triggered and charged and upset, and had all this energy in your body, and now you feel totally peaceful and calm, that's a very powerful reminder that this work is having an effect and it is able to shift you. So please write down your numbers. That exercise of writing down your number, your movie title, your body location before you begin, and then again, writing down that number afterwards gives you concrete evidence that things really are shifting and changing. So I celebrate you finding yourself, feeling yourself, discovering where I end and where you begin, identifying those healthy boundaries, and then carrying that knowledge forward as you initiate new relationships, as you strengthen good old relationships, and as you interact with the people in your life. Having the sense of boundaries, mastering these boundary issues, being aware that they're going to be there throughout your life and that it's important to understand them and manage them is an incredibly important part of your health and well-being. So incorporate these techniques into your daily experience. Find those boundaries, experience those healthy boundaries, and then bring this knowledge into your relationships so that you have this tool of understanding what a healthy boundary is, who you are, what your relationship ought to be, and setting the appropriate boundaries with each group of people and with each kind of person in your life. Thank you so much. Until next month's coaching call, I'm signing off. Don't forget to post in the forum and let us know how you're doing. If you'd like to work with me on one of these coaching calls, you can also post that request in the forum, and we'll get back to you that way. Till next month, thanks again.